connecting to the spirits, age old. We've seen movies, we've read books. Connecting to the spirits, we hear mediums, we have tarot cards, we have all kinds of situations in which we're always often looking for that oracle, that could I see my future? What would my future look like? And in my life, when you think about connecting to the spirits, a thought always comes forth, which is, even if I could see my future, would I interpret it correctly? And anyway, don't we have free will? Do we not have multiple paths in front of us? And each and every moment and day, we make a choice. So connecting to the spirits on this particular day, Halloween has always been one of my favorite holidays, and not from any kind of situation, except I love the colors black and orange. I love all of the looks of Halloween. I love the children in their costumes. But when we talk about connecting to the spirits, let's start, of course, with what today is. It all began, according to the history that I read, in the Celtic era, which was around 2,000 years ago. And the Druids, or the priests of that time, it was the end of autumn, and of course, they were looking at the winter ahead. And the Celtics, the Gaelic tradition, was basically looking to for several things. One, for protection for the winter. Secondly, for predictions of what their winter might look like. And the Druids at that time thought that the veil between the outer world and our physical world was the thinnest. And so they wanted to protect the people from any outer worldly things. And while I was collecting these slides for this presentation, I thought these rather looked like what it might have maybe felt like during those era and that during that time. But All Hallows' Eve, also, they were warding off the evil spirits. So if you were a druid, you would be chanting, and you would also be building a bonfire, and you would also conceal yourself. The people would conceal themselves. They would have masks, and they would have costumes so that the spirits wouldn't recognize them. Then they would also, this is where they think the beginning of this trick-or-treating began, was because they would ask for fuel for the fire, and they would ask for food, and they would, as I mentioned before, they considered the veil the thinnest, so they were obviously warding off the evil and bringing on the good. And of course, we like to think of Halloween and the full moon, but the full moon is not very often on Halloween, but of course, in Hollywood, it always is. But, you know, during that particular time, they would have these incredible bonfires, and they would have chanting, and they would have many of these aspects, and they were very devoted to this particular time. So this is 2,000 years ago. Then, of course, the Catholics, Roman Catholics, were declared the All Saints' Day was, of course, November 1st, and so October 31st is All Hallows' Eve. And the All Saints' Day is basically honoring the martyrs of present and the martyrs of past. So I thought these were two rather nice little representations of what probably occurred. In 46 AD, the Roman Empire actually overtook much of the Celtic lands, and they also brought their festivals to light. And one of the festivals happens to be for the goddess Pomona, who was represented by the apple, which is why bobbing for the apple. I thought that was kind of a fascinating little fact. Then the Catholics and the Celtics emerged. They kind of drew together and created the current Halloween for that particular part of the world. And of course, it began our current Halloween traditions. And before we get into that, it was kind of interesting, but in the 9th century is when the Catholics and the Celtics actually combined the two of them. But when the English came to America, they were very strong Protestants, and they did not bring Halloween with them because they considered that not a hallowed day, but a evil day. So actually, Halloween in America in those early years was celebrated in the South, the southern part of the states, wouldn't be states then, but Maryland and on south. It wasn't until the early 19th century when the Irish, it became, of course, Celtics, then Ireland, the Irish potato famine occurred, and the Irish came to America in droves, and they brought their Halloween tradition with them. Thought that was a little bit fascinating. And then in the early 1900s, we in America adopted Halloween as a community spirit, and this is when, of course, we began the trick-or-treating and the costumes, and of course, there's always Hollywood in all of what Hollywood has done with Halloween, and the theatrical seance, which is always an interesting thing. But I've always thought the trick-or-treating was it's just Halloween is for those adorable children in those cute little outfits dreaming about what they may or may want to be. And it's obviously, again, when we think of Halloween, we think of the moon, we think of the jack-o'-lantern, and in that whole idea of Halloween, then let's move on to the next obvious topic, which would be the spirits and bringing the spirits to us, or at least recognizing who they are. So before we begin, there's just three premises from my perspective that helps me in terms of this particular talk. We are an ever-evolving universe. We are responsible for our actions. And there's both a seen and an unseen world. And before we go any further, I'm 67, and I began at 7 probably recognizing that there were things that other people didn't see. And I've been very lucky because I was raised in a theosophical family, and I was nurtured by an incredibly wonderful group of adults. Now, my peers did not know I could see. This is very difficult. My feet were in two camps, and my friends might say something to me that really wasn't true, but you have to respond to their words, not their action. But I wasn't alone. And in that particular beginning, I had many wonderful people who helped me develop and understand these skills. I've often thought, if I were raised in another kind of family, what would have occurred? Well, if it was a strictly religious family, I probably would have become, knowing me as a personality, I would have become silent until I finally found a home. But I was lucky. I didn't have to. I could be open with adults. It wasn't with my friends. You do understand that, period. But I could be with adults and with a few many adults who were very influential. Dora Kuntz was very influential. Her brother Harry Van Gelder was my mentor. And in Portland, Anna Berkey and the Follines and the Clemens, these were all very powerfully connected people, very learned in theosophy. They just understood things better than I did as a child. And so as I was developing and working with these people, I became more comfortable wearing two hats. So for me, this isn't a debate of whether it's actually there or not. For me, it's just always been there. And so in this presentation, one of the questions that's always asked is, well, what is it like? And what does it seem like? And what does it look like? So I have never seen a color in an aura that cannot be represented in nature. The texture and the feel, of course, is entirely different. When we see a rainbow, we don't experience a feeling of the rainbow. We just simply see the colors. But the rainbow is rather nice because it has that ethereal quality. Not in my lifetime, but in some lifetime, there will be a way to measure people like me. And there will be a way to measure all of us in a slightly different, but we haven't developed the technology. I mean, think of how x-rays happened and MRIs and all of these medical diagnostics that certainly didn't happen in 1900, but certainly are very present today. Well, I'm too old to say that it's going to happen. Well, you never know, I suppose. Some very bright person might find the right technology that will be able to see what I can see. But for this presentation, when we talk about colors, and when you think of colors, think of the rainbow. And also recognize that we have, as you have read in literature, we have a fingerprint. I am not only this physical human being, but I also have an aura. I have a fingerprint of an aura. The aura is ever changing because the aura that is the most obvious is the emotional one. And we have only so many emotions. And I'm sure in the beginning I was a little gray. And so but it's ever present and it's ever changing. And Dora Kuntz has a wonderful book on the personal aura that's in the library or probably still for sale that has wonderful plates. But when you look at the plates, remember it's ever changing like clouds. It's ever moving. It's, yes, oval, but it's not necessarily here. It can be here or it can be out there, depending on who's talking, who's communicating, or what's occurring. We're ever evolving. As we all are very comfortable with, we see the beautiful water, we watch it, yes, erode, but also the power of that water is magnificent and it is ever present in our life. And like any emotion, it is a continuing experience. With change comes, of course, as with autumn, these incredibly beautiful, marvelous colors. Red in autumn is absolutely gorgeous. Red in an aura is not so gorgeous, but it can be represented. You can see that brilliance, but it doesn't make you feel good if you're next to that bright red because they're probably pretty mad. But the red in the slide is as good as I can get, but it has this just beautiful hue of reds and orange. Again, this is even better. You can see those beautiful red trees. I just love the autumn. I love the spring too, but the autumn, that change of our season is just so dramatic the way our trees represent us. I like this picture because as you have seen pictures of angels or devas, as I've always called them, they always have this lovely look about them. And I like the look of this particular slide because it gives you the concrete idea of what would their veil look like if we called it a veil. Again, the etheric quality of the moon, and obviously the power of the ocean and the entities that control the ocean, the devas that are part of that, and the water sprites are also very, very much part of that whole changing scenery. Just take a little break here for just a sec. I like this particular picture because this happens to be a lovely snowy day on the mountain skiing. And the beauty of this particular scenery for me was not just how the white was represented, but how the etheric quality between the land and the trees and the snow and that incredible pristine feeling as you're in there. And I'm sure you've all experienced some form of this. And of course, here, of course, in Chicago, this is what you get, right? You get these beautiful iced trees, probably far more than we do in the Pacific Northwest, although we get them too, no question. This particular slide, this one, go together to start this particular conversation. So let's talk about connecting to the spirits, and the spirits that are really very fun to connect with are mountains. The mountains themselves have these incredible beings that, you know, if if we talk about balance, it's not just us who, you know, are tilling the ground and feeding it and putting water, but we have these incredible beings who are also responsible for their area. And we have these incredible mountain devas that actually, if you could see them in life, that first slide of that bright sun is the center. And then there's that stream coming from them, and they stream down these mountains and into the valley. And in the here in America, the devas are very easy to connect with. All you have to do is look and love the mountain, and you get a connection. It's like a squirt. It's just a feeling. You've had the feeling, whether you've recognized that that's what you are actually connecting with, doesn't matter. But there, it's a two-way street. It's that momentary, well, boy, you like me, and let me just, we just kind of, and you're grounded, and here I am. So I like that particular look. In some pictures, I've seen faces. Now, I'm not saying I've never seen the face, but the face doesn't matter to me. I have a face. We have faces. Why do they have to have faces? I mean, it's that power. And again, I'm going from my sight, and those who also have sight maybe have very distinct looking faces. It has maybe never been interesting enough to me to see. Do you have an eye, a nose, ears? Why would you? So again, more mountain pictures, because there isn't anything quite in my life more powerful. And of course, we live in the Pacific Northwest, and we have that beautiful range, the Cascades, and the beautiful mountains connected with it. This mountain, of course, is close to home for me, because this is Mount Hood. And this was the first deva I really connected with, because I'm a kid, and I'm learning about what I can and can't see. And here is this beautiful mountain and this incredibly friendly deva, and has this beautiful feel and this beautiful look and this beautiful apron or, yes, for lack of a better word, but just this beautiful clear into the valley. This is, I believe, not of the Pacific Northwest. This is more in Europe, and I believe this particular picture is in Switzerland. And they're also interesting. They're friendly. They're really powerful. I think it's just because, who knows? I don't really know. I don't know that part of the history. I'm not privy to it. I don't understand that part. The only devas that were very difficult to communicate with were when my husband and I were in Nepal, and we had a chance to go and see the Himalayas. And I was like, well, yeah, but I don't know who you are. So, you know, it was like I was very timid and didn't attempt to make any further contact. They just weren't very friendly. But the ones in America, the ones that I've seen, are all very friendly. And the ones in Europe, the Switzerland, are gorgeous. Up in Canada, Northern Washington, the Olympics, very, very beautiful. And again, you can just feel it. And if you can even picture in your mind what it looks like, it's very connecting. Again, another slide to show you just the look of what that may look like down below. So now let's just talk a little bit about the colors. Love is a pink, and it's kind of a rose pink. And when you're feeling love for someone, you just sort of bloom. And love is kind of a hard color to capture. And the only representative I can find are three little roses. And they're very pretty, and the colors are fairly true, but it was a little disappointing. I wonder if maybe I could have gone to, you know, I don't know, a field of something pink would have been nice. But these three represent the color of what pink looks like when it's flooding your system. Now, intelligence is, as we all know, and you've read many places, is yellow. And yellow is a very interesting color. It's very beautiful, and it's always on our crown. But what's interesting about this particular color is that, as you can see with sunsets, it can be also with orange around. Now, orange is a color of power and selfishness. So sometimes it's not just a pure yellow, but it ends up becoming a powerfully, it's not a positive. We don't want a lot of orange. We might have it from time to time, but we wouldn't want to have that look. But it's a very good representation of what I've seen as far as orange. Another beautiful representative. Again, back to the rainbow, remembering that etheric quality of the colors are probably the closest representation of what it is in actuality. Now, spirituality, when we talk about the devas, a mountain devas, or we can talk about trees here in a minute, this is often the color that you see. It's just a very common color that is part of that particular kingdom. It is that connection. It's that beautiful lavender purple color. And of course, this lovely slide maybe is just a nice little representation of what it looks like. And this beautiful flower, of course. Our life's work, let's just talk momentarily about the aura. So we have a signature. And the signature is, again, it's oval. And I have a basic signature look that has carried me all my life. I have my abilities, my dreams, my hopes, everything that's part of my lifetime, this incarnation and multiple incarnations is part of this and can be in symbol. We often have, of course, we can flush with a particular color. When I was nervous, I'm sure I flushed gray, which is just a color of being a little bit scared. But we tend to not stay flushed. When we're very angry, we flush red. Now, for a person who has temper issues, they have that red tinge. So it's easy to contact. So it's like the quick temper and how you can just flush that particular color. Well, of course, we want to promote love. So if we are in habit of being loving and kind and positive in our life, then we flush that particular color more often than others. But in the aura, and as if you look in Dora's pictures, you'll notice that on the bottom, it's generally a brownish color, which is like dirt. But I always look at it as kind of, I mean, I've never seen anyone who didn't have a little brown. I just think that's our grounding. And brown is a kind of a selfishness. You know, we all have egos, and I try really hard to leave mine out the door because she's really controlling and drives me crazy. And then we have our life's work, which is very often the color, it is the color of green. And I have two pictures to represent probably the closest to what that green looks like, which is grass. And the thing I like about the color of grass is that, of course, grass needs lots of work. We feed it and we mow it and we trim it and we water it and we do so all kinds of things. Well, this is our life's work. And when we are really in our life's work, it becomes larger than just a small band. It becomes, and as I'm talking with people who are telling me maybe their life's goal or their dreams or what they're working towards, I can tell by the color shift whether or not, hey, that's the direction they need to go, because it's just like this, it just comes up. It just becomes, oh, wait, there you go. That's your feeding area. Through here, of course, we have, and up here is our thinking and our thoughts. Our brain is, Saturday we'll get into, but the brain is that mechanical part of our mind, but this is our mind. And our mind is what has come from incarnation. I think there's a good reason why we don't remember all of our incarnations. I always find it interesting when people say, oh, I know my past life. I know what I was Napoleon, or I was, you know, no one's ever a scullery maid, you know. They're either a queen or they're some. I always think it's interesting. And I'm not saying, I'm sure we've all had experiences where we think, you know, I think this may have been some direction that I've been before. I'm not by any means belittling that. I just find it interesting that you know, you can get a little caught up in it. But our mind and our person is through it. My goal this lifetime is that this person, Robin, next lifetime can pick up where she left off. That maybe some of the struggles that I've been through in this life, because I'm just as human as everyone else, that I have learned from those struggles, and that some of those I can let go. I don't have to deal with that struggle again. And so maybe if that's a scar in the aura, because see, sometimes we can have scars when we have deeply emotional, painful things. You scar. You don't just scar here, you scar. And as you heal, as you get beyond that scar, it actually heals and isn't as apparent as it is in the beginning. So life's work, green, that's the middle part. So down below, brown, you know, grounding, keeps us on the ground, makes us kind of who we are. Up here, we're etheric, we're in meditation, or we're in prayer, or we're chanting, or we are someplace out of self. We are selfless out here. Now let's just talk a little bit about my favorite thing too, which are the invisible friends. I love this picture because it just looks like it's teeming with little guys all through it, because of course the forest and our grounds and our, as we invite them, we have little nature spirits who love to help. When I was a girl, of course, I was very interested in the nature spirits because fairies are so much fun, and they don't play so much with adults, but they do children. Children have a great imagination, and it didn't matter what we were doing, or I didn't question anything. As I got older, you know, you question things. Oh, well, gosh, is that just imagination, or is that really true, or all of these things. When you're a kid, you don't question anything. Oh, yes, there it is. Oh, gee, let's play with this little golden ball. Let's do this, let's do that. So I would sit in the forest and play with my little friends. And they would be, the fairies were flitty and cute and like small little versions of, well, no, not the devas. The devas are very serene. Like little light sparks. Again, I don't remember them having faces. I don't remember looking for faces. So, but little marks. In the ground and around the base of trees are things like we call, these little nature spirits are little green, brown guys, and we call them gnomes. I think it's a great name. And they're not as communicative, and they never play. But they are very grateful. I mean, if you tend a yard, I've mentioned it before, if you have a rose garden, or if you have a garden of any kind, or if you have trees that are in need of help, ask, I need some help here. They're hearing you. Visualize it. I would love to have a little help. What should I do? And if you get inspired to add some nitrogen to your, do it. You know, allow that inspiration, assuming that seems reasonable at the time. But the trees themselves also, of course, have a being. And when the beings, like in the redwood forest, I'm sure if you've had any experience in going into California and gone into that temple of trees, is there anything like that in the world? It is the most serene, gorgeous feel to those incredible beings that have loved and nurtured these trees for hundreds and hundreds of years. So nature spirits, they're around us. They are enthusiastic when we're enthusiastic, and they love it when you... I would follow my father when he was mowing the lawn and take the leaves or the grass clippings off all the flowers, because that's what they wanted me to do. Oh, get those, they can't move the grass clippings. They can work around them, but they can't move them. So I used to, do that or with my father. Again, teeming with activity, it just gives you that feeling of serenity. We've all been in that place. We've all been in that position. Nothing like, of course, we have water spirits also, and water spirits are with clean water. When we have pollution, you don't see them and don't feel them as much because they can't work with it. I've never been to a spill, and I can't imagine how horrible it must be. I've been to Vancouver many times, and Vancouver, British Columbia, is very, very beautiful. Around Stanley Park, it's quite beautiful, but you know, it's so polluted that beautiful water just doesn't have quite that feel about it. But this looks very pristine, and I bet if we were there, we would probably feel them or sense them or see them. And again, I'm representing this as that clean water and the water spirits that are associated with it. And of course, then you'd have your spirits taking care of the green, and you know, it's teeming with activity. And of course, then we have the spirits that are in the sky and in the weather and whipping up a storm. I mean, I don't think they think it's a bad deal. I think that's just part of their job. I know it's destructive and we're not liking that, but you know, if you realize that all of this is a balance, you wonder sometimes, okay, so what was that balance for? What did we need to balance in that? When Mount St. Helens erupted, it was a very interesting experience, and it erupted, probably 35 years ago. Because I was, about 35 years ago. And I remember at the time I was very interested. So what came out? Well, it's very interesting, but actually what comes out of the earth are these beings, but you don't contact them. They're kind of very earthy, and I don't think they've communicated. I didn't attempt it. It just didn't look like something I'd want to attempt. It wasn't negative. It just wasn't, you know, up there in the air. So there must have been some reason and some balance that Mount St. Helens needed to lose her top. She's pretty again, but you know, poor thing doesn't have a top. I like this picture, back to this picture, because we have fire sprites, and there isn't anything more fun. And the next time you're sitting in front of a fire, just allow yourself. I don't see with my eyes. It's like I take one step over. And you've all had experiences where you've sensed someone in the room, or you've seen someone on the side of a glimpse. And then you turn, but you don't see it. We all have these experiences, but when we grow up, we say, oh, imagination. Well, I say, it's not. It's there. And the next time you're in front of a fire, they're the easiest to see. And they are just like the licking of the flame, and they're doing a job. They're cleaning. This is my job. I'm supposed to clean this wood. So they have a job just like every other sprite has a job. Now, we want to control that fire. We certainly don't want to have. I've never been to a fire that's out of control. I don't know if I'd want to, but I wonder what the sense would be. I mean, would they be in glee that we're really cleaning? I don't know. But I know the little guys, so I'm talking about controlled fire. The next time you have it, and of course you're getting into winter, allow yourself. Just don't judge. Just sit. Take a breath. Bring a calmness to you. And just allow yourself. Is there anything here? Just allow yourself. If the fire is burning, we're talking natural fire with wood, not the gas fireplace, the natural fire with wood. Try it and see if you won't go away thinking, oh, I think maybe there might have been something there. Artistic expression is often in the color of blue-green, so you know, the artists among us. Not quite the blue-green I would have wanted, but close. oceans are wonderful. Another lovely thing, just like going through the forest and enjoying the bounty of all of the invisible friends, the ocean is wonderful. And if you admire the ocean, the sprite will just connect. So as you look at that ocean and say, oh, how beautiful, oh, how beautiful, because most oceans are, because of the wave action, are clean and are, is, you know, if there isn't a spill, they're clean. And as you're going, be quiet and just send out that lovely feeling. And when you see the spark of the light on the water that you can explain optically, just allow yourself not to explain it. Just allow yourself the feeling of it, because those little sprites, they're bright. They're the little bright color. They don't just stand there. They're flitting, and they're connecting with you as you are connecting with them. I like this blue-green. I think it's quite pretty. Cobalt blue is really the color of healing. It's not the pale blue, but the cobalt. It's a very deep color. And the only two slides I can come close to, this happens to be crystal, and I think that's maybe the closest to the cobalt. The only problem with this slide is that navy blue is willpower. And so it can be confused with cobalt. I've worked with many patients over the years, and I had a wonderful woman who was dying of lung cancer, and she couldn't figure out cobalt blue. So we went to the fabric store and we found the closest we could get, and she bought a swatch and she just wrapped herself in it. And I thought, good, you know, I mean, why not? Just make it as a shawl. So this is what I was talking about, kind of gray. You know, that fear. It can also be, for me, depression is not so much gray, but it is brown. And fear, when I see people who live a life of terror, and they are in control, it is like the bark of a tree. It's not so fluid, and it's not so open, and it's kind of cutting edges, and in some cases it's too long being that way to free up. So when you think of some of the things that you deal with, we all deal with certain things, think about, gee, I don't want to turn that into bark. That doesn't sound like a good thing. I think maybe I want to look like a tree and enjoy the tree, but I don't want to really have that inside of me. I like this particular picture because fear and depression is often riddled with black. Okay, black. We know black isn't, maybe it's a nice color to wear, but it is not a nice color to have on us. And true, ugly, determined hatred is a black and a red. And you just avoid those people. You sense them. You know them. You're in the car. You're driving along. And you think, oh, I think I'm going to avoid that car. Because you just know there's something. You recognize it. You acknowledge it. And you're respectful of it. Well, it looks like it's not a pretty color. It might be pretty in nature, but it's not particularly pretty on us. Now, we are a product of multiple incarnations. We all know that. And in this particular slide, it's the eyes. So, if you have ever been around an infant or a child, they always are looking at you directly. And what they are doing is, they're saying, who are you? Who are you to me? They never stop looking. It is only we as adults find it rude to look at each other so directly in the eye, and yet this is who I am and have been incarnation after incarnation. I may not be blue-eyed, maybe brown-eyed last time, I don't know, green. But this is who I am. And when I have this powerful connection with people, it's like, Who are you? Were you part of my lineage? Were you part of who I am? And of course, this little guy is part of my lineage. And I'm a very proud grandma. So I have to use him. So our paths vary. Some of us are faster than maybe we ought to be. Some of us have long roads ahead of us. Some of us are taking the easy, sandy way or climbing. And maybe we've climbed every year. But we're really, as a human race, only as fast as our very slowest. We are all moving together. And it behooves us to be kind to our friends and our unfortunates, and to be helpful to those who are of the have-nots. Because maybe we were a have-not last time, and maybe a have came along and gave us something: food, shelter, clothing. We, as a society, are honor-bound to help others. And in my world, it is just a given. I believe, in my heart of hearts, we as human beings are in service to each other. So I always think of the bike race. Well, you know what? I'd be at the back. So just to end on this note, and then to open up for questions, I'm sure you must have one or two.
Are you ready for questions?
I'm ready for questions.
I'm Becky, and I just was wondering if you would elaborate on seven, because that's something I certainly can use in my own life right now.
Wonderful.
As it seems.
Well, actually, first of all, we need to recognize that it is a negative energy, and let's assume it's a negative energy from another person. So the first thing is to recognize that the energy is not helpful to you, and that maybe it's toxic. And you need to be respectful. Our first duty is to self. Not to be self-involved in, I'm so wonderful. It's first duty is to self. We need to feed us, we need to clothe us, but we need to be respectful of what our needs are. And if you have a negative energy around you, and it's a energy that you can avoid, then it would behoove you to do so. But another question to yourself would be, however, is this something I need to work on? Is this in front of me? A personal story, when I was in high school, you know what high school's like in teenage years. I mean, who'd go back to it? And when I was in high school, I had some girlfriends that were difficult. All girlfriends are difficult. And my mother was wonderful always and said to me, now, Robin, you need to deal with this. If you don't deal with this at some level, you'll just keep meeting this type of personality over and over. Well, I'm a girl. Left high school, went to college, so excited. I didn't have my roommate, so I was going to just, it was at random. And I walked in, and guess who my roommate was? That personality. And I remember that it was just like my mother saying it, and I thought, I've never seen the personality again, so I must have dealt with her. So that's the question. Is this a personality, or is this a negativity that is something that is repeating itself over and over? If it is, then maybe it is yourself helping you through something difficult, maybe not just this incarnation, maybe another one. Or the other question is this also a time that I need to finally say no? Be gone. There are people in our lives that are toxic, and we have to be respectful of ourselves and know we've all had people in our lives that we think, well, okay, I've done as much as I can. I'll come back again. Maybe we don't have to be this or that to each other. But I can't go any further with this one because it just makes me sick. So you have to do a little analysis and then be respectful. And then in your quiet time, whether you use meditation or whether you use prayer, I always advise everyone to have at least 20 minutes a day that is just a quiet moment of centering. And then ask the question, is this good for me or not?
Do you think that sometimes the negative energies in people around you are projected energies of yourself that you are asking to meet in others so that you can deal with them? That just occurred to me.
Well, I suppose that's always a possibility. We all know people who the glass is half full and those who have the glass is half empty. I've always been a half full person. I always see the good in everything. That's just part of who I am. So I don't know how to answer that. I do believe that there are many, I have watched many a room be completely caressed with a negative, ugly look. And I've left the room. We've all gone to malls shopping and said, got to be out of here. Or my parents used to take me to churches when I was a little girl to see if there was a deva associated with the church, which was always interesting because, interestingly, most of the Catholic churches, yes, but not all churches do. And it was very interesting, the feel of the church, when there was a deva associated and when there wasn't. So negative energy, I just would like to think that's not true. I don't think so. I think maybe you've just bumped into some negative, and or maybe negatives are attracted to you because you're so positive and they want that to make them feel better. You know, that's the case too. You know, there are people who are just naturally attracted to you because somehow, just talking to you, they feel better about themselves. Maybe they're struggling with something. And that's okay for a little bit, but not like full time.
But at the same time, you're saying that we only go as fast as the slowest of us. What about the ones who are very negative, who are going very slowly? What do we do about them? You're saying get away from them.
Well, maybe you can't help them, but maybe someone else can. I mean, think of Mother Teresa. Look at the work that she did in her lifetime. Look at some of the people. Okay, she's a name that we all know, but we also know people who run shelters, who work with very distraught human beings, mentally ill human beings, and they just have that capacity of absolute love. Well, maybe you're not one of them that has that capacity to just embrace and to help. But you'll help in another way. Maybe you help that person with eating, or, you know, you're helping the other person help them.
I wanted to know, do you think that being around the actual color that you would like to emanate will influence you to become more that color aura?
I'm not sure I'm understanding. Are you?
So what I'm saying is, like, if I need to be healing, if I would be around the more purple things.
Oh, I see. Yes.
I mean, well, would that connect you to be drawn towards that?
Why not? If I were in a health crisis, I'd probably have nothing but cobalt blue. I'd probably have every article of clothing of cobalt blue. I'd probably have cobalt blue sheets. Why not? It would help me. Yeah, that's all right. Why not?
Hi, my name is Juanita. And could you say a couple words about ESP?
Well, extrasensory perception is either sight or sound or sense. Extrasensory perception, quite frankly, is among all of us. We all have varying forms of it. Some of us have convinced ourselves that we don't have it and are going through life maybe a little bit looking like a log, but we all have it. It is the recognition. I've had 60 years of working with it, so I'm very comfortable in the world, and I'm very comfortable with identifying what is my imagination and what is true. So it is a perception that we are born with, and it is a perception that we develop as children and as we are raising our children. We are helping them become very sensitive to the world. So extrasensory perception for me is being an incredibly sensitive, nice person who is picking up on all the markers. Whether you want me to speak with you, whether you want me to acknowledge you, or whether you really want me to just be quiet and to just slide around a corner. When I started talking openly about what I could do, which has really only been not that many years, I remember a good friend of mine who said to me, "Oh my God, you can see auras," and he was just like turning that gray slate. I said, oh, it was a lovely man too, and I said, "This is your personal mail. I don't impose. If you ask me and it's appropriate, I'll be frank and open with you, but this is your personal mail. This is our personal mail. This is who we are, and we are respectful of it." And I love that. Dora said that many, many times, and I love that feeling. So ESP, it's personal, but we all have it. Does that answer?
Sort of.
Okay.
I was wondering if you'd talk a little more about the images of being in a forest or a woods or mountain area and how you connect with those essences.
How I connect is that if I'm with someone or with a group, I just isolate myself so that I don't have any talking and there's no music and there's only just the quiet of the ocean or the trees. I meditate. I also chant. I have several ways. I have prayer. It just depends on the moment, on what I need. And the whole point between the prayer or the chanting or the meditation is to center self and be out of my personality, be out of the blah, 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 blah thinking. And once I'm out of that, then I can become, and then I can connect with. And it's a very deliberate on my part. Who's here? And it's a shift in my sight. You can disturb me and I can shift back out. So it's deliberate, but it's a quiet moment. And it's always devoid of sound other than natural.
Robin, I have a question. Probably most of the people in the world today live in some non-natural environment. Most everybody's living in a city of one sort or another. What can you say for people who are in these sort of concentrated areas, and that's actually where you live, and you're not leaving anytime soon? What might be some counsel for that?
Dora used to say, I grew up in Orcas Island, and it was just a beautiful camp in Jalaya, and Dora would say that in your meditation, go to the camp mentally. Well, go to a place mentally in your prayer or in your quiet time mentally where you love to be. If it's the ocean, feel and smell and feel the sand. Just be there. Be there. And just allow yourself that 20 minutes a day, actually 20 minutes morning and night. I begin every day with quiet moments because it's so important for who I am. Otherwise, it's too difficult for me to live in this world. It's way too jangly. I also have a world of my work that whenever I go into a room, a treatment room with a patient, I have to leave this jingle jangle outside and just be very centered. So I am blessed in my life that I get to get out of the city every moment. You can get out of the city in your mind with listening to incredible music. If you're riding the subway, if that's part of your commute, I would have in my little ears, I would have earbuds that gave me music that inspires me. You know that music that just transforms you, that you just relate to whatever it is that they are presenting, and it just transforms you to the mountains or to the sea or to a lovely mountain cabin, some place that you have created.